This week on Art in the Air, our whole show features 1994 Highland High School graduate Greg Jamrock, who went on to a prolific 30-year career scoring many television shows, including the last four Academy Award ceremonies and several Oscar Award-winning motion pictures. Our spotlights on Chesterton Art Center's outdoor After Dark Ungala on May 9th, plus their May exhibit, Material Truths.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight from the Chesterton Art Center, the Executive Director, Hannah Hammond-Hegman. And she's going to tell us about some different things coming up in May, especially some wonderful things with the Art After Dark, which has been around for a while. Hannah, welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thanks for having me. It's always good to see you guys.
Yeah, it's always excellent to see you, Hannah.
Thanks, Esther.
So the gala's been a fixture for some time now, and of course during COVID it disappeared, but we brought it back. But you have kind of planned, along with the gala committee, kind of a different take on it. So why don't you tell us all about that?
I know. So Art After Dark returns this year with a big twist. It's kind of an ungala, is what we're calling it. And it, rather than at a different location, we're going to hold it here at home. At the Art Center. So we're going to be closing the street in front of the center and have tents up. So there'll be live music and really great food, and people will be able to enjoy all of that both inside and outside. And then our classrooms will be open and the galleries will be open with art demonstrations and exhibitions and silent auction. So it's going to be a really wonderful evening celebration of everything that we are.
So kind of a street celebration along with being inside the building and everything. It sounds like a whole different way to, I guess, what you call an ungala. So
yeah, something a little more casual.
Dress code or theme?
The attire is BU. So we want people to just come as they are, to really enjoy the center, to learn about who we are and everything that we offer.
I'm pretty excited to see Stop, Drop, Rewind. It's always, that'll be such a pleasure.
I know. So Stop, Drop, Rewind will be outside. There's a special VIP event from 6 to 7 o'clock that night, and Marco Villarreal will be inside playing. VIP tickets include that, as well as some champagne and hors d'oeuvres and a special art-making experience. And then general tickets are from 7 to 10 p.m., and they can enjoy, you know, the whole building and Stop, Drop, Rewind and food from Leroy's Hot Stuff. It's going to be a great night.
What are the ticket prices are for that, for the VIP and guest tickets?
Yeah, so VIP tickets are $125. And there are a limited amount of those. And then guest tickets are $75. Of course, all proceeds from the evening, as always, go to support all of our endeavors and our outreach programs that serve hundreds, you know, throughout the Doolin community.
Right. And so it's going to be May 9th when we're doing that event. And so it's, and the 6 to 7 will be the thing. But, so it sounds like a whole different thing. And, you know, it's kind of a step of faith that it will work. And, of course, I think the town of Chesterton has been very cooperative about having this.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, we're anticipating a really wonderful, joyful event. Yeah, and it's a new thing. It's a bit of a, you know, we're excited. We're excited to kind of bring it here.
So let's talk about exhibits coming up in May, sure. May and beyond. So tell us what yes. you got planned.
So if you join us on May 9th, of course, you'll get to see this amazing exhibit in May. It's two women artists, Elizabeth Rotzel and Heidi Bailey, both from South Bend, who are coming together for a two-woman show here from May 3rd to the 30th. The work is spectacular. They both use assemblage and collage and materials that we would kind of call traditional women's work materials, but they're putting these things together in really gorgeous and unexpected ways. Heidi Bailey does these assemblage sculptures with found materials, including insulation foam and pom-poms and found sculptural figurines. And Liz Rotzel does series with acrylic painting and these lace collages, and the colors are so vibrant. The meaning is really gorgeous. And it's a wonderful exhibit that I hope people certainly come out to experience. And they can join us on May 16th for the reception, which is also the kickoff for Chesterton's Third Friday event series from 4 to 7 p.m. Yeah, on the 16th of May.
Hannah, are the art festival applications open?
Yes, ma'am. They are open. Applications for the Chesterton Art Fair are open. They don't close until April 30th, so there's still plenty of time.
Oh, excellent.
Now, something else you're involved with, and you actually had an event at the Art Center, was about having a cultural and arts district. Tell us maybe a little bit about that and touch on that.
Sure. This is very exciting. So I am part of the Chesterton Branding and Leadership Corporation, which is a separate 501c3 dedicated to a thriving downtown Chesterton. It's been around for about 10 years. And we are, through Creative Convergence, which is a joint initiative of the Indiana Arts Commission and the Indiana Communities Institute of Ball State, we're awarded $10,000 in a grant. And our project is to build and develop a designated arts and cultural district for Chesterton. And we're embarking on a really larger scale community engagement process so that the community has a voice in all of this, which is really important. So we held the kickoff event here at the Art Center, and there will be four more events throughout the spring where the community can gather and start to map the meaningful cultural and artistic assets of the town.
Excellent. Well, in our final minute here, if you have anything else in the summer you want to touch on, and then maybe tell us again about the gala and any events in May.
Sure thing. So Art After Dark, Art for All, is Friday, May 9th here at the Chesterton Art Center. Information and tickets are available on our website, chestertonart.org. Summer camp registration is open. We can't wait to be full of kids making beautiful stuff here all summer long. Exhibits are happening. So everybody should check the website and follow us on social media channels to learn about everything we're up to.
Sounds great. That's Hannah Hammond-Hagman. She's from the Chesterton Art Center. Art After Dark, Art for All, May 9th, 7 to 10 p.m. with a special VIP section at 6 o'clock. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight and sharing.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Hannah.
Thanks, Esther.
And a Spotlight Extra. Listen to Your Mother will return to the Hobart Art Theater in Hobart on Sunday, April 27th at 3 p.m. And you'll have a series of live readings and performances by stories, songs, and poetry by local writers all about motherhood. Again, that's Listen to Your Mother, Sunday, April 27th at 3 p.m. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
Hey, this is Bela Fleck, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
I am pleased to welcome our next guest, prolific 30-year career scoring many television shows and motion pictures, including Oscar-winning film Oppenheimer, The Wild Robot, the Oscar-winning short documentary The Last Repair Shop, and many others. Along with his partners, he has formed Fine Line Music, that's become the world's leading full service for music preparation. Most recently, Fine Line Music was responsible for the orchestrations prepared for the Oscar ceremony. Our paths recently crossed at a fundraising event for the Highland High School Band, as he was the guest of honor, and I was the MC. And also back when I was still the auditorium and theater director at Highland, and he played orchestra pit in his freshman and sophomore years. Please welcome to Art in the Air, Greg Jamrock.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Aloha and welcome.
Well, Greg, we always like to start with your origin story. And I sort of know it because we already shared that when we had that event at the high school. But I would like you to tell our audience how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Sure. We had our event at Highland High School, and we were focused on the fact that I had gone there. And, you know, I had started playing guitar in the first grade. I was sort of forced into it. My mother took this opportunity when my best friend decided to play the guitar and take lessons. So she suggested that I go, and I refused. I don't want to do that. And she asked why. And I replied, well, because it's just too much work. And so, of course, he dropped out after two lessons, and I stuck with it. And it was a lot of work. It was, you know, it was really difficult, but it was something I really enjoyed. And fast forward to the fourth grade, I was at Our Lady of Grace Elementary, and that's the year you try out for the band program. And so I went to, I think I picked out the drums, and my mother said, no, you can't do that. That's way too loud. That's way too loud.
So my mother said the same thing.
Right. And then, okay, how about the trumpet? Oh, no, that's too loud. Okay. So we settled on the saxophone. And of course, 4 years later, when my brother went to choose what instrument he would want to play, he chose the drums. And I, you know, said, Mom, what are you doing? And she said, well, they're all too loud. They're just all too loud. And so I wound up, you know, learning the alto sax, the tenor sax, the barry sax, got into high school. And that was where our paths crossed, Larry. You were the theater director for 2 years while I was in high school, my freshman and sophomore year. And I really wanted to be in the musical, the school musical, and it was Sound of Music. And there was a guitar part. So I was already able to do that. And it was really terrifying because it was very exposed part for Edelweiss. And in order to do that, I had to buy a pickup, and, you know, you put it on the guitar, and it just any proximity to any microphone or speaker, and it will start to feedback. And if you touch anything, it will crackle and terrify everyone. So it was a lot of pressure. But then I also, you know, for the other rest of the musical, wanted to be in it, participate, but there's no saxophones in the pit orchestra for Sound of Music. So I asked the band director if I could transpose the French horn parts, which we didn't have any French horns. I asked the band director if I could transpose the French horn parts for saxophone. If I played the alto and my buddy played the tenor, and the ranges fit. And he said, fine, but you have to do it all. And it just so happened that my father, you know, he's a computer systems analyst over, it was called Metron Steel. It's changed owners many times now, but he had a program that was an early notation program for music, kind of like a word processor would be. And he set me up with it, and it was incredibly complicated. Like, compared to the way that you can be very efficient and move fast through it today, you know, it was a DOS-based program, so there was no graphic user interface. I had to enter in for every note so many parameters, the octave, the length, the, you know, the pitch, if there was a flat or a sharp on the note, if it was a staccato or a, you know, whatever the articulation was, if it was slurred. And then once you got all that input and done, and then you have to check it all, then you have to hit transpose, and in theory it would work. And it did, and it was great. I was really excited to be part of it, and it really laid a great foundation for what I do now.
Oh, no, I was just saying the intensity of that is something that a teenager is so geared toward. You know, like, we have, it's that time in our life when we really can devote. It's kind of like me and embroidery. Like, people used to embroider things, and now It's not. Yeah. So what a great exercise and intro into what you're doing now. It's like,
and it's so interesting. My son is, I have a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old. And so my 15-year-old is that age that I would have been, you know, 14, 15. And it's really interesting to see how much they can learn at this age. It's, you know, I always say it's really exciting and like a little bit scary. And my wife said, why do you call it scary? Well, it's, you know, imagine if you could learn that much your whole life.
Right.
It's you know, it's really exciting. And it's kind of, you know, it's a little bit, it's like when you're going too fast in a car or a whatever, you know, plane or a roller coaster. It's exciting, but it's also kind of frightening. Yeah. You feel like
it's interesting because when Apple, and I can't think of what the comparable program was, but when Apple did GarageBand, it introduced to young students this ability to compose music, which, boy, can you imagine if we would have had that when we were growing up? I mean, how it changes lives so dramatically to have this technology, which is what I think you were referring to with your son, you know, like he doesn't have to go through what you did. Like, here is this huge menu of options for
it. Is, but it's also a double-edged sword a little bit, because part of the thing, like, that I find, you know, a lot of times I get resumes here at Fineline, and I'm kind of questioning, why am I interviewing them? I feel like they should be interviewing me, because these resumes are so incredible. But it also, a lot of people who are just starting out don't have those foundations. And I think there's something to be said for having to do all the work and not having the computer right. Do it for you. There's a level of trust that can get too comfortable with when you know, like with autocorrect or, you know, autospell, and really knowing those foundational things. Like right after at the end of the years of high school, my mother taught at Columbia, and I was able to do some high school classes meant for high school kids that were college level. And, you know, so I did music theory and music notation, and we had to get an ink pen with a, you know, fountain pen and learn how to write a treble clef and a bass clef and the notes and how long the stems are, you know, how far apart the lines and the staff should be, how to make, you know, all those notations. And it's really difficult, and you get a lot of hand cramps, you know, but you also realize that you can't trust the computer all the time, you know, it'll make mistakes and not know it. And so I really, you know, that was another good foundation to go to those classes. I loved going into the city of Chicago. I really did, you know, growing up in Northwest Indiana and having the South Shore train just take you right into the heart of the city was one of my most favorite things to do. I studied guitar up there. I took an engineering class in the Loop, right by the Rock and Roll McDonald's. It was really a blast. And then I wound up going to Berklee College of Music after high school. I thought maybe I might go to Indiana University, but I really, you know, the back of my guitar book said Berklee Music Press. And I remember meeting with my high school counselor in the last couple of weeks of high school. And she said, you know, we never really had any meetings. I just wanted to check. And what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm going to go to Berklee College of Music. Oh, okay. So I think she was a little bit pessimistic about that choice. But, you know, I went and I just loved it. Boston's such a fantastic place to go to school. There's just so much happening there. And I really loved it. And, you know, movies weren't really a part of my family's culture. Like we had seen a few movies. I think maybe Cinderella or one of those Disney films, you know, they never used to release them.
Right.
And my mother and my aunt got so excited to go see it. And so we did that. And I'd seen like Raiders of the Lost Ark. Not really a whole much, some stuff on TV. And I had no idea that people wrote music for movies. I had no concept of that. And a friend that I had made in the first couple of weeks of Berklee invited me to a introduction to film scoring class. And it really changed my world. I felt really drawn to it. And this this need to want to learn how to do that. And Berkeley was great because there were some teachers there that had just been working in Hollywood, and there had just been an earthquake, and some of their spouses wanted to leave that situation. And so they had all this material from recent movies. And so it was a great, you know, playground to learn all those skills. And it's sort of like the composition aspect, but combined with all the craft of how you sync up music to film and why it works and some of the psychology of it. And it was just really fascinating.
Now, Berkeley is like more of a conservatory than, let's say, going to IU School of Music, and especially much more focused. Wouldn't you say so?
Yeah, my wife always teases me that I never went to real college. I never got, and that's true. You know, there's no Greek life. There's no school team. There's no school song. Could you imagine asking hundreds of musicians to agree on a style of music? That just would never happen. And but I loved it. I loved being in the city. I loved going to all those classes. And I wound up getting this really wonderful internship that was paired with a scholarship. It was the George Delarue Scholarship. And the internship was at a company here in Los Angeles that no longer exists called Segway Music Editing. And they did all the music editing on each project, which was two parts. One was for every movie they ever make, they have to make a temp score, a temporary musical score from existing music, because you can't show a movie with no music. It doesn't work for some bizarre reason. We all expect music to just happen and, you know, pull us in different directions emotionally. And when you don't have that, it seems very foreign and very, you know, very specific, like silent movie. Watch a silent movie and you'll notice it's a very different feeling. And so there's that aspect. They make these temporary scores. And then they also work with the composer to make an original score after that. And so it was this really fantastic opportunity where they paid for my round trip airfare from Boston to LA, a car for 6 weeks, a fully furnished apartment, and a daily stipend. And it was the most incredible thing. It was just kind of like it is now, actually, just after a couple strikes and a downturn in work. And so there wasn't much happening. And at the very end of it, at the end of the 6 weeks, we had a scoring session for the Fox animated feature Anastasia. Mm-hmm. And there's a scoring stage at Fox, the Fox lot, and it had been closed for 3 years for renovations. And they had just reopened it. So they were rededicating it with this session. And because of that, they were projecting film, which never happens. Now everything's, you know, a digital video. They were recording to tape. It was like a 100-piece orchestra and an 80-piece choir all together, which never happens now. And it was really an amazing event to witness. And as an intern,
of epic proportions, right. You know.
Oh, what an amazing baptism, right? And it was really incredible. And I just fell in love and wound up meeting all the people that I worked with or for over the years at that session, really. And so at that point, I had gone back for my last year of Berkeley and then decided to move out here. And there was another sort of downturn. There was another strike that had happened. And I called all those people up and they said, "There's no work, kid." And so I really struggled to find anything. You know, it was the kind of crazy trip that you make when you're in your early 20s. I think I had, $2,000 or $3,000 to my name. I drove a U-Haul out to LA from Boston. I settled in Burbank, California, and tried to find work. And it was really hard.
What year was this?
This was 1998. And I wound up finding this Berkeley had this network of people that tried to help alumni find work. And this guy called and said, you probably won't even be interested in it. It's delivering magazines, but they are, it's the magazine is called Film Music Magazine. And at that point I said, sure, yeah, no problem. I'll do whatever. And that wound up actually being a really, really great opportunity. I drove magazines all over the city and had to learn the roads, which, you know, are a pretty complicated network of streets here. Yeah. Everything's named the same in all different parts of LA, but they're very different. And I had to use this crazy map called the Thomas Guide, which right. you had to flip from, you know, thousands of pages. And then they wound up starting a thing called the Film Music Network. I wound up helping them run it. And it was a great way to meet, you know, people in the industry here. But as with all those kind of things, you know, when you're running it, it's perceived differently as when you're attending it. And, you know, so, my position there kind of continued to grow. I was essentially a, you know, like answering the phones in the, at the front desk for the magazine and then helping to put on these networking events. And then they started to have some trouble. And so I got this opportunity to assist a composer, David Schwartz. And so he lived in the Pacific Palisades. And I think at the time he had maybe 5 or 6 scripted comedy shows.
Wow.
And one, his previous assistant was moving on to be a co-writer. And so they needed to fill that position. And lucky enough, I managed to get it, which was really a great opportunity. And this was right around the time that reality TV started. Interestingly enough, within a couple months, he had no shows. They all got canceled in favor of reality shows. And so I was, you know, working at this great composer's studio in the Pacific Palisades, recording his neighbor doing his demo for his voiceover. You know, he wanted to be and get into voiceover. And I wound up getting this call from somebody that it was a kind of a funny event that happened when I was at the magazine. Somebody called saying, we have this composer's demo. We really want to hire him, but we cannot find him. And maybe he's a subscriber to your magazine. I said, well, I can't, it's not a public database. I can't give that out. And, but who is it? And they said, oh, it's Alexander Janko. And this is one of the people that I had met on my internship at the Anastasia sessions. He was Dave Newman's orchestrator. And I said, oh, well, I know him personally. I'll give you his info, but you got to say that Greg Jamrock
right.
told you. And I'm not kidding, right? As the work kind of died off at Dave Schwartz's, Zandy called me out of the blue and said, hey, you got me a gig. I want to take you out to lunch to say thank you. Could you come by the Pacific Palisades?
And there it begins.
I'm not kidding. I was there already. So we went to lunch and he said, I've got this little film. It's an independent film that I'm going to write the music to. And I want to know, I need an assistant to help me build my home studio and do that. And it's called My Big Fat Greek Wedding. And so I helped him build his studio and put everything together. We worked on this little film and it just took off. And it was an incredible hit. And, you know, he basically said, I don't really want to orchestrate anymore. Would you want to orchestrate for Dave Newman? And, you know, it wasn't as simple as that, but essentially that was how I wound up orchestrating for David Newman in about the year 2000. And
life is such a beautiful puzzle.
Right.
I mean, it really blows my mind. You know, I think about it because, you know, I feel like there are a lot of people who are very, very talented in music. And they are very difficult to work with, you know, and so much of it is sort of your personality, but also the quality of work you do, because there are a lot of people who are super talented, but not happy doing what they're doing, you know? And I always, we have so many people that come through and ask for, you know, they're looking for work, but, you know, they've just left whatever film scoring program at whatever school. And I always tell them, you know, I really think if you do your best quality work on everything you do, no matter how little it is, if it's like driving a magazine around LA, or if it's, you know, setting up a networking event in Burbank, you know, I feel like it really does mean a lot to people when they see somebody doing, because it, like that phrase, good help is hard to find. It really can be true. And sometimes, you know, the hardest to solve problems are maybe a little easier than we think, you know?
Right.
I feel very, very fortunate to have, you know, just sort of been in the right place, or, you know, done whatever legwork it was to get into those places. And
well, look, it's like so, so amazing that the magazine that you're delivering is in the industry that you're interested in. And so you've got then facial recognition with all these places that you're dropping off the magazine, which, you know, I mean, and that's part of it. Like, oh yeah, I know you, or I recognize you, or it was really just this whole trajectory is just so beautiful how it builds.
And you're listening to our guest today, Greg Jamrock, on Art on the Air, Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. Glad to have him here today and tell us his journey. I had a question that I didn't ask you on when I did the interview on the stage, was you have a thing for a while called Jamrock Music. So was that a bridge to something else, or?
Yeah, so I... you know, I worked as David Newman's orchestrator for several years, and he called me in 2005. I got married in 2005. We bought a house in Culver City in 2005, and everything was going great. And David Newman called me and said, you know, I probably won't be doing that many movies. He really wanted to change his focus and conduct, which is primarily what he does now. He conducts... he's an amazing conductor, one of the most exhilarating conductors to stand behind on a stage and watch him work. I learned so much from him and will always be so grateful for that experience. And so when he called and he said, you know, I'm probably not going to do that many more movies. I want to focus on conducting more. And, you know, you can work for other people, you know that. Oh, you know, and I said, no problem. You know, I appreciate the call. So I hung up and my wife came home and she said, I just got laid off my job. And I said, well, I just found out that, you know, I don't really have much of one either. And so I wound up looking around, asking around for work, and found some work at a music preparation house here in Los Angeles. And I wound up working there for 15 years. And during the pandemic, you know, I'll say this for anybody that, you know, wants to go into entertainment, you have to understand entertainment is very harsh, right? It's not very forgiving. The rewards can be really incredible, but it is a tough business. And typically, you know, people behind the scenes and that, I'm sure people in front of the scenes too, but you know, you work a lot of hours. You work a lot of hours. You work a lot of weekends. And, you know, it was a pretty difficult workspace, where I was. And during the pandemic, it got worse. And I made the decision, in the pandemic to leave and move on. I'd been there 15 years. And I just felt it was the most important thing I could do. To be honest with you, it felt a lot like when I moved from Boston to Los Angeles. The big difference was now I have a mortgage, a car, a wife, two kids, a lot more riding on this. You know, if it doesn't work out, there's a lot more at stake. It was frightening, but it just felt like I had to do it. And my wife was, and my family were really supportive. Actually, my kids one day, I had started this company, Jamrock Music. It was just me. And I had one other person helping me who had helped out at that other place as well. And his whole demeanor was just, he was so much happier, so much, like I'd never seen. And I was telling my family at dinner, you know, how great it is to see this person just flourishing and having a great time. And it was so fun, interesting, because my kids said to me, well, Daddy, you know, you're so much happier. This sounds just like you. And it was really interesting that I couldn't quite see that as much as they could. And so it felt like, you know, maybe I am on the right track. And so 6 months after leaving that old place and starting, you know, whatever it was, I had no plans, but this jam rock music, I had a couple people call me, my current partners, Joe Zimmerman and Abe Libos. And they said, you know, we need to leave. We can't take it anymore. Can we partner with you? And I said, that would be amazing. And they said, well, the only issue is we cannot call it jam rock music, even though that's an amazing name. We love it. We need to come up with a name that's not all about you. And I said, of course, I that's, you know, not a problem with me. And so, they spent a good portion of time, thinking of fine line music and researching. And, you know, we went through many iterations of what it could be. And we settled on fine line music service. If you just use the first letters, FILMS, it spells films, you know, sort of as a little nod to the fact that we do a lot of work in film. And it just felt right. And we really love our brand, you know, we feel that we're the best in the world, and we feel that we're able to do this in a way that is really positive. You know, we do work at a very, very high level, but also we can have some fun doing it, because if we're not having fun and working in music, what are we doing this all for? And I think the pandemic showed us how important being social is.
Right.
And so a big core that we have, two core parts of our company, is that we want to be part of our community. So like we support the AVPA, which is the arts and performing arts program at the Culver High School here and middle school. And we, you know, support them. My kids are in the band. Joe's kid is in the film department there. And it's really important to us to be part of the community that we're in, but also have a social component to this. So much of what film music is being alone in a room in front of a computer. And the pandemic really showed us how important it is, how much we need social ties to people. And so we, you know, we'll have social events for clients and our team members. And, you know, we don't all have to be best friends, but we can all be in the same room and really have a good time. So
your website shows that. It's such a friendly, the way you've presented the people you work with, it's so pleasant. I mean, the casualness of the photos and everybody there, it was very thoughtful.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's very intentional. I think one of the most important things for us is relationships. You know, there's lots of people that can do music. There's lots of people that can do music well. The thing that really sets us apart is the relationships that we have with our clients, our composers. You know, I mean, you have to think about, I mean, they're trusting us with so much. They're entrusting us with so much. They're this precious, thing that they've created or that has come to them, or however you think about it. And then they have to sort of hand it off to us. And there's a lot riding, you know, their reputation, their sound, also the money, the amount of money it takes to record a live orchestra is incredible. And everybody is very conscious of the budget and, you know, every penny spent. And that's the thing that we can help out with is, you know, making sure that people don't waste money, that we do everything efficiently, that we take pay very close attention to the instruments that need to be used, For example, I was telling Larry at this event that we just worked on the Oscars, the Academy Awards, 97th Academy Awards. It's my fourth time working on it, but the first time is our fine line. And it went incredibly smooth. And one of the really important things is, you have to tell the woodwind players to bring an alto sax and a flute and an alto flute and a piccolo and a clarinet. Because if you miss one of those instruments and everybody shows up to the Dolby Theater, they can't play that piece of music if they don't have that instrument. Right. And so it's all this record keeping and knowing, the music, but also knowing how to keep track of everything. And, it's a really important part of the process, and it allows the composers and orchestrators and arrangers to just focus on what they do,
What is your personal part of the process right now?
So we call ourselves a full service music preparation house, and basically it's sheet music. We help to create sheet music for humans to read, because everything that happens in film and television, and usually albums too that have an orchestra, on it or a big band, it gets mocked up with orchestral samples that are played on a piano style keyboard, and it's triggering sounds of people that have been recorded. They'll play an A on a violin, and you play that on the piano kind of keyboard, and it sounds like a violin playing it. And so the computer can do anything. It can play very, very fast and very, very slow. And the weight of these orchestral samples is very heavy. And so our experience is coming in and knowing how to put that on the page so that the violin players can play it, the whole orchestra can play it, and it sounds like what the composer wanted it to sound like. A lot of times, if you just take what's there in the computer and put it on the page, it's not balanced properly. And that's the value that we add to it. And so we can do everything from after the composer writes the music to when the orchestra records the music. Or we can just do one part of that. On the project we're working on right now, we're hired by the orchestrating team and the composer in conjunction. And so the composer sends us their music, and we will do a thing called sketching. We'll make a sketch of it, which is sort of like a rough outline for the orchestrator. Then we'll send it to them, and we have to do it in the right program, because like you have Microsoft Word, or you have Apple has their Pages program. Everybody works in their own program that they like. Right. So you have to know all these different programs, and we'll sketch it in that program for them. And then what they'll do is they'll take it and orchestrate it. And, they'll say, okay, the flutes are going to play this. The clarinets are going to play that. They're going to be loud. They're going to be to play it short. And then they'll send us a full score, which has what everybody's doing on it. And then we'll engrave just the flute part from that and just the violin part. And so we have to engrave it in the computer, and then we have to proofread it to make sure that it's correct. And that's where, everybody on my team knows music, knows orchestral music. They know that a clarinet needs to transpose. They know that the lowest note on the oboe is this. They know, and so that's very important, because the computer can also play those notes that are out of range. But if you get there in the orchestra, they the hand will go up, and that's the death knell. If the hand goes up, then, everything stops. So we try to avoid any questions on the stage. With all the experience that we have. And then what we do is we print it out on paper, and we take, for any, a given movie, you can have an hour of 45 minutes of music, on that movie. And it's a lot of paper, and you have to keep track of it and make sure it's in the right spot in everybody's book. Sometimes the orchestra is 20 people. Sometimes the orchestra is 120 people. It just depends on the budget, what's happening.
And we're listening to our guest today, Greg Jamrock, on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and WVLP, 103.1 FM.
It's kind of the ultimate in what every day will bring. So that was like that was so intense, which you have to, I mean, we go to the movies and we spend the hour and a half, and at the end of it, we go, you know, sometimes the music works with a movie and sometimes you're left so unsatisfied because of the music. And it takes me back to something that you mentioned in the beginning of our conversation about the psychology of sound. Did you take were there classes in the psychology of sound, or is this something that, you know, you intuitively know, I guess?
I didn't have any classes in the psychology of film scoring, but what you do is you wind up studying a lot of scores. And I find it fascinating because one of the things that I really notice, you know, I have a lot of friends that do film school, and the films that they study and that they revere tend to be the polar opposite of the films that the film composer programs study and revere. And it's very interesting when those meet, when the music meets the filmmaking, sometimes that crosses, and sometimes they're very far apart. A lot of the films that I know that I was studying at Berkeley and that were told, oh, this is a great score, the filmmakers hate those films. It's fascinating. it's really interesting to me. And sometimes, you know, you know, there's something to be said for that creative aspect of why does music work with a picture or not? And I think, you know, it goes through a revision every 15, 20 years, right? You know, you get these sounds of, you know, very early films are all European, very heavily influenced by opera, because these are concert composers coming over to get away from what's happening in Europe at the time of the early 20th century. And they're looking for jobs. And so they're getting these jobs and writing the music that they know. And then you fast forward to, you know, the 60s, and everything is groovy and, you know, kind of post rock and roll and, you know, pop music. And then the 70s, where everything is electronic. And then John Williams comes along, and all of a sudden everything is orchestral, you know, Wagnerian and big. And then it kind of, you go through, you know, different permutations of how much electronics and how much acoustic instruments. And so we're sort of always caught in the middle of that. And, you know, clients want to separate themselves and have a sound that's unique, right? Because if you sound like John Williams, then in LA, they can hire John Williams. They don't need somebody that sounds like John Williams. And so, you know, sort of finding that tone, I don't know that there is an answer for it. You know, it continually evolves.
There's such a subtle sweetness to the clip I saw of the Wild Robot, which encompasses like everything that I just sort of referenced, you know, like when you get it so perfect that little clip just makes you so emotional. It's it's like, what a gift.
Well, thank you. What scene was that?
It was when she's saying that she is a wild robot, and she's all the animals are there. And it's just and the leaves are like, and it's just really, I don't know.
That was a really, really special project. And it felt very much to me like, I worked on the original Ice Age and it really, the sessions for the Wild Robot, the whole, everything about it had a feeling of Ice Age to it. It really felt like this is a really special project that's really going to have a long life. And in fact, I believe it's been greenlit for a sequel. The music got a lot of awards and even nominated for an Oscar. And, you know, I thought it was such a special project. It really stuck out as something that was unique and different and sort of trying to, you know, find its own footing, especially with this percussion section that Chris used called Sandbox Percussion.
So excellent.
Yeah. And, all those aspects. And actually with DreamWorks, we went and recorded it in London, and DreamWorks had quite a lot of the production fly out with us. And they were there at the sessions, and some of the animators were drawing the orchestra while they were recording. They were up, you know, we recorded at Air Studios, which is an old decommissioned church, and you could go sit up in the balcony of the choir, and wow. they would sit there and watch the entire time. It was really magical.
How do you decompress from everything? Like when your job and your love and your passion and your hobby are all the same, is it a walk on the beach, or what do you do to sort of mix it up?
Well, I like my family and I live here in Culver City. We like to bike around. We're really blessed to have this amazing community here where we can get to the downtown area. The kids can get to their school on the bike. You know, we can do all these things. So I like to spend time with my kids and my wife, and we like to go on hikes. It's sort of difficult now that the fires have damaged so much of those areas that we used to go to. So, we're hoping that nature can be quite resilient and spring back sooner than later.
No, like painting hobby or coin collecting.
So. No painting, no coin collecting, and trips. So we'll be going to the Galapagos Islands. My son's going to do a Spanish immersion course for 2 weeks right after school ends, and then we'll go to the Galapagos, and that'll be a lot of fun.
You know, I ask you this question when we're on stage, but I'm going to re-ask it for our interview, and then a part two of that. The first part of that is, are you ever wanting to compose your own music? Because I think, you do the talent that you do with what you do, you'd have a good sense of what would work on that. And then what projects are you looking forward to doing? You touched on a few of them, but maybe go into that for a few minutes.
Yeah, sure. So I have to say, being up close and personal with so many talented and different composers, I do not want that job. I love being close to it. I love helping out. It's not something that speaks to me. My brain works really well with what I do. I love it. It's sort of the organizational side, the computer knowledge that I have, the musical knowledge that I have. It's, I say sometimes, between 60% craft and 40% creative to 80% craft and 20% creative, it's the sweet spot for me and my personality and the way that my brain works. I really love orchestration and engraving and being in charge of a group of people and helping to bring somebody's vision to life. That's the most exciting part of it for me. And so as for projects we've worked on, Ludvig Göransson just scored Ryan Coogler's newest film, Sinners, which is a vampire film. Yeah. We just finished work on that. That's going to be pretty incredible. We just worked on the Oscars. I'm going to London in a couple weeks with the composer Jeff Russo for Alien Earth and season 2 of Citadel, which will be very exciting. We just worked on Alto Nights with David Fleming, which just came out with Robert De Niro. And we're working on this project called Chad Powers with the composer Natalie Holt. And that's about a football player who goes undercover at a high school to play some football, based on, I think, a Eli Manning and Peyton Manning skit that they did on ESPN. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We also work with artists like the electronic music composer James Iha and Lady Gaga. So we've got projects going on with them. And yeah, it's been an incredible we're about 3.5 years old now. And I'm really looking forward to the next 3.5.
How can people find you online if they want to reach out to you? Website information?
Yes. So Fine Line Music Service, singular, finelinemusicservice.com. And on Instagram, Fine Line Music Service.
Well, I appreciate that our paths crossed again from you being in high school, and actually that Sound of Music in 1992 was my...
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's just kind of an interesting way things cross. And of course, Edelweiss was such a beautiful moment in that show. And of course, my daughter was the very young Gretel at that time. Greg Jamrach, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air, sharing your arts journey, your music journey. It was wonderful to have you on again. Good luck and best of wishes for your future success with Fine Line Music.
Thank you so much, Larry. Thank you so much, Esther.
Oh, thank you. It was such a pleasure.
So nice to meet you.
Art in the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. We'd like to thank you for listening to Art on the Air. Our show relies on the support of not only our show underwriters, but also our listeners who make donations to this station. Your support of this station will ensure Art on the Air may continue bringing you the best of the arts and culture programming for Northwest Indiana and beyond. If Art on the Air is important to you, please consider supporting this station with a one-time contribution or even making an ongoing sustaining contribution. For information on how to make a contribution, go to this station's website or our show website, breck.com/AOTA. We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BREC.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.